Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Hi, it's Dan and Becky Gaffney. What good is it having a doctor if he never answers the phone when you call?
We'll talk about it tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Vila Hula, Muskegon, Michigan. She was the debutante of the Champagne Room and met a very powerful man. Details later, strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Lessons for life learned outside of class. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk show host. I'll tell you about it later here on Sterling on Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of how a vice detective's prostitution case quickly turned into a murder-for-hire plot. Coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Vila Hula, the Barney Fife of customers, people of Walmart, later, Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Hey there, welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday. I'm your host, James Parker. Well, I'm your backup host, James Parker. Now, don't turn the radio station just yet. I had a call-in stick. Although he's a great radio host, he is but a mere mortal, but I am his backup. And if I sound familiar to you, for regular listeners of Sterling, who brings you Florida stories, that's where you've heard this voice before. Florida stories. It really is that simple. There's no getting around it. That's my bag. That's what I'm known for. And you know what? I'm proud of it. That's totally fine by me. If I'm the hold my beer guy, I'll be the hold my beer guy.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Now, as is tradition when I fill in for Walter Sterling over the last 4 or 5 years, instead of giving the canned version of Florida Stories, sometimes I do it, but tonight I'm going to do a live version of Florida Stories. I don't know if you've recognized. Let me go ahead and pull back the curtain on the magic of radio. But the Florida Stories that you normally hear is something I record, and then they stick it in when it's perfect so everything lines up. And, you know, I hope I didn't just pop the bubble of magic, you know, that has been existing. But you're going to get a live version tonight. So a little extra cool factor on the fact that you're tolerating the backup guy. A couple other things we're going to address on the show. Number one is that tomorrow is my birthday, which means technically on the East Coast, my birthday starts in 2 hours. And so we're going to have a little birthday talk because, look, for, I don't know, maybe for my grandma's generation, they had some other birthday song like, you know, the classic birthday song, Happy Birthday to You. And my parents, your parents too, probably had the Beatles version of the birthday song. And that's sort of been their generation's iteration of the birthday song. Now, me being of the next generation, I'm not the young, I'm in my 40s here. We're sort of coalescing around the Two Live Crew birthday song. I would rather hear this than any other birthday song on my birthday, which starts in 2 days. So all you other tourists out there, you know, good for us. It's our, we did it. We managed to not die for a whole year. That's amazing. So there's going to be some birthday talk. I'm going to have some friends on. One of my friends just bought a pot farm. No, I'm not telling you about some sort of criminal. This isn't Tulsa King. Although outside of Tulsa, there is such thing as a legal pot farm, which still kind of sounds like Tulsa King, except this guy's coming in from out of state and has some old mafia ties, which still kind of sounds like Tulsa King. So my friend, which I swear isn't Tulsa King, is doing the exposition of the, what is that on? Is that on Amazon Prime? Is that on Apple? I forgot what that one's on. It's on one of those. I don't know. I've got like 12 of them now. I don't think it's HBO Max. It's Hulu. Producer's nodding at Hulu. I think it's Hulu. So, yeah, we're going to talk to my friend actually in about 20 minutes or 25 minutes, what it's like having a legal pot farm. And we can talk about this openly and honestly because everything we're doing now is legal. I mean, I've always done everything legal. I'm talking about him. So you'll meet him in a little bit. And also, you know, when you're one of these people that just runs around willy-nilly buying million-dollar pot farms, he also went to the Kentucky Derby. So we'll ask him from the point of view, and you and I who are just common folk out there and don't get to hobnob with the people out there who probably drink with their pinky out and wear gigantic hats at horse races, what it's like going to the Kentucky Derby over the weekend. Because I actually feel like talking about it this year, and you're going to feel like hearing about it, because we're not going to talk about a bunch of million-dollar horses running in an oval for 3 minutes. We're going to talk about the seven horses that died last week. So yeah, there's actually some drama in the horse world that I think you'd be interested in. You're going to meet another one of my friends. His name's Pugs Moran, and he has his own little show that he does, a fellow broadcaster, but he's going to bring you the story about this guy, Glenn Kuiper. You don't know who he is. It's not important that you know his background, except he actually accidentally, I think it was accidentally, said the N-word when he was at a broadcast. He was talking about being in Kansas City. He's like an Oakland A's broadcaster, and they said they went to some famous restaurant, and instead of the Negro League Hall of Fame, he said the N-word. And we'll dig into this later, but let me go ahead and wet your palate with the actual audio here. And don't worry, it's been cleaned up. You think I would play that? I think I bleeped it, right?
Gates or one of them barbecue joints, and you think about your boy. Don't be afraid to pick me up a jar of that barbecue sauce now.
I'm going to tell you something. Dallas and I are going to talk about it today. We had a phenomenal day today. League Museum and Arthur Bryant's barbecue, all in the span of 2.5 hours.
And that little beep there was the worst beep in the world for a white person to say is the N-word. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I almost wish we could do like the full litmus test with this. Like, what if Jay-Z was on the Royals and Oakland A's broadcast and he said it? Now, it would still be frowned upon. That's not going to be the network's preference, but, you know, does he have to issue an apology? I mean, he might, but I would like to see. And then what if it was a Hispanic fellow? What if it was like Bad Bunny or for older people? What if it was Pitbull? Or for even older people, what if it was Charo? Or Desi from I Love Lucy. I don't know, man. My Hispanic pop culture references are disappearing over the age horizon. But would they have to do the apology? So coming up, you're going to hear about that. You're going to hear his apology and stuff as well. Look, I'm just whetting your appetite because I know you can't stick around for the next 3 hours. And I'm telling you, you got to come back and start checking out the podcast for Walter Sterling's show. I listen to the show. I hear him tell you to check out the podcast and check out the parts you missed. And most of you, you know, you're well-intended and you got things to do. You got family, you got a job, whatever. And you want to go check it out, but you just haven't yet. Something needs to trigger you to go ahead and hit that and hit follow. And then when you go listen to podcasts, we'll pop up and you're going to catch a lot of good stuff that you would have otherwise missed. Some of it might even be for me, but let's be honest. Most of it's going to be from Walter. And I'm also going to take you, something I like to do when I fill in for Walter is I like to do a history segment, because I don't like to just waste your time with celebrity gossip or talking about something stupid that happened on a sports field or, you know, who's passing gas in an elevator and all these other like societal life things. I like to educate you. I like to leave you as a better person whenever I get a chance. I don't want to squander this amazing opportunity as to sit in this seat that Walter has created, where for over the last decade, he's been talking to some of the biggest talk radio stations. Like right now, this blows my mind. I'm just some little hayseed bumpkin from the middle of nowhere. I'm from literally a hayfield in nowhere. And I'm talking on the biggest stations. I'm in Pittsburgh right now. I'm in St. Louis right now. I'm in like four different stations in Florida right now. I'm in New York. I'm in Los Angeles. This is fantastic. And so I'm going to teach all of you something that you should have learned from history by now. And that's a little thing called divorce by combat. Oh, honey, the crazy dude on the radio is making things up. No. You can go Wikipedia, hole it later. You can go Google, you know, backtrace it later. But there is such a thing as divorce by combat, and I'm going to bring you from the manual that was written in the 1400s from a German, or it was a Germanic tribe, their law book called Fechtbuch. And it describes not only that there is divorce by combat, but what the terms of divorce by combat are. You ever heard the term fighting with one arm tied behind your back? You ever thought, well, where does that come from? Why would you even say that? Is there some point in history where it was written down into a legal law book that if you and your wife got into the biggest argument of all and you wanted to break it off, but the eyes of God just wouldn't let you break it off, one of you's going to have to die? That's where we get one arm tied behind your back. So can you stick around? If you can't stick around, come back to the podcast. This is what I'm telling you. This is the kind of stuff that Walter does and just painstakingly puts it together over the course of a week. Three brilliant hours. And you know what? You want to do the responsible thing. You want to go to bed early because you got to get up tomorrow. You probably want to exercise or work out or something tomorrow. But I'm begging you, just waste 2.5 more hours with me and we'll squeeze a little bit more out of this weekend sponge. All right. I'm James Parker in for Walter Sterling. If you want to join the show, the phones are open. 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of iCarly.
Guys always tell girls to calm down, and it never works. It just gets us all whipped up. You see me all whipped up now? It's because you told me to calm down.
Out of fiction came a true story. The Pretty Woman of the Empire Club in Washington, D.C. Her name was Dallas. And she danced on that pole like there was no tomorrow. Frequently, high-powered people come into a strip club in beautiful Washington, D.C. And a gal like Dallas can meet, perhaps, a boyfriend, a sugar daddy, or perhaps her next husband. And so it happened. An addicted, confused man went into the champagne room. And he took a gander at Dallas, and they started a torrid affair. Dallas became pregnant with his child. She left the strip club industry because she realized she didn't want a child to be around it. She moved back to Arkansas, where she was from, and raised a cute little girl she named Navy. The father of that baby said, "I ain't no baby daddy." DNA tests proved otherwise. And he was paying her 20 grand a month she wanted to raise. He wanted to pay less. Well, here's the deal. London Roberts, a.k.a. Dallas, was making more money at the Empire Club than 20 grand a month. She wants to be paid by her baby daddy, the son of the President of the United States, Hunter Biden. And now you know the rest of the story. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool for Sterling at Night.
Hey there, welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday. I'm James Parker. I want you to think in your mind about public service announcements. You don't put a lot of thought into these, and for good reason, because most of them are boring. Most of them have no actual artistic or entertainment value. But I want you to go back and think about the public service announcements, the PSAs in your life, where they started, how they've evolved over the years. And for older people, this is going to be a trip through memory lane. For younger people, you don't understand how just absolutely disastrous and god-awful the history of PSAs are. They've always been weird, you know? And when you look through the history books, it kind of started out public service announcements. You kind of think of maybe Rosie the Riveter, you know, "We Can Do It," the World War II propaganda posters, and you know, I'm sure propaganda goes all the way back to the cavemen, but for the modern iteration of public service announcement, they exploded on the scene in the Cold War with the old duck and cover. Now, I was talking about my dad, so old, he looks like Santa Claus, and him and my mom remember the duck and cover ads that came on TV. They would come on radio, and for those of you who are too young to remember, this is what it sounded like. Now, not only is this song trash, but I want you to listen to the contents of this 1 minute and tell me if any of this is good advice or even plausible advice.
Duck and cover.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover. Paul and Patty know this. No matter where they go or what they do, they always try to remember what to do if the atom bomb explodes right then.
Really?
It's a bomb. Duck and cover. Sundays, holidays, vacation time, we must be ready every day, all the time, to do the right thing if the atomic bomb explodes. Duck and cover. That's the first thing to do.
duck and cover.
And cover.
First, you duck.
Duck.
And then, you cover. You duck and
duck.
Cover. Tight.
And
duck
cover.
And cover under the table.
Duck.
It's a bomb.
And
duck
cover.
And cover.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You.
And you.
And you.
And you.
Duck.
And cover.
No, don't applaud that. I don't know if that might be the first time a lot of people are hearing that. If you've heard that 1,000 times, thank you for sitting through it again. I hope you enjoyed the little trip through nostalgia there. But I want you to dissect what they actually said. Like, how bad of advice was that? Like, evaluate the pragmatism, the actual utility of that PSA. Number one, was anyone's life saved from this advice? Did this advice ever do anyone any good? No, not only did it not save anyone's life from an atomic bomb blast, we never got hit with an atomic bomb. So not only was it like bad advice, it was bad advice for an implausible situation. We're like, well, we didn't know at the time. Well, you know what? It's been 50 years since duck and cover started and we still hadn't been hit with the bomb. I think the fears were a little unfounded. I think if you would have told the old duck and cover guys in the black and white PSA days that, hey, you can fast forward to 2023, 60 years later, and there still wouldn't be not even an atom bomb, not even a conventional bomb, not even a water balloon has been dropped on America by Russia since these ads came out. So not only is it just horrible advice, as if getting under your desk would save you from an atomic blast, it never came into use. So what do we have backwards looking? That was just a totally scare tactic. You're just scaring the crap out of people for nothing. And how do we know it's nothing? Because it's been 60 years and it didn't happen. But you remember, if you're a little bit younger, if you're my age, see, duck and cover was way before my time. I had to go find this out on YouTube after the fact, how bad the PSA grandparents are. But the PSAs for my age, sort of the PSA parents, we remember stop, drop, and roll. And stop, drop, and roll is pretty amazing when you go back and look at it, because let's digest it now through our adult eyes, stop, drop, and roll. And for younger people, if you never heard it.
If your clothes ever catch on fire, you want to stop, drop, and roll. One thing you want to do is cover your face. You don't stop rolling until an adult tells you to.
Okay, so look, that's better. That's an improvement over stop, drop, and roll. I mean, it's good advice, I guess. It seems like it would work. It does seem a little weird to get advice from your government for the next time you catch fire. You know, duck and cover was addressing thermonuclear war, you know, World War III. This one's addressing, oh, your blue jeans, your dungarees got a spark on them. So better. It sounds like we're going in the right direction here. Stop, drop, and roll. That's when I was a younger kid. But as we progress through the 80s and the war on the era of the war on drugs sort of took over the PSA game, you may remember the next evolution in the PSA world was this is your brain on drugs. You remember that one? The whole fried egg? This is your brain on drugs. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Okay, so that was the real popular one. But I want you to remember the other one that used to come on Saturday morning cartoons when you'd be sitting cross-legged on the shag carpet with a bowl of Fruity Pebbles in your lap or whatever. The parents who use drugs have kids who use drugs. I learned it by watching you, okay. Remember this kid? Oh, this was a classic. Absolute classic. I learned it by watching you. Parents who have drugs have kids who use drugs.
I learned it by watching you.
That one always cracked me up. It's like, so what's the advice here? Hide your drugs better from your kids? Love it. I'm James Parker, in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Walter M. Sterling.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by the words of Kate Littlejohn.
I told you we should have done a sting. It would have taken an hour. We'd control all the variables, get Shales negotiating on the wire.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Hi, it's Dan and Becky Gaffney. What good is it having a doctor if he never answers the phone when you call?
We'll talk about it tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Lessons for life learned outside of class. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk show host. I'll tell you about it later here on Sterling on Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired New York City Police Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of how a vice detective's prostitution case quickly turned into a murder-for-hire plot. coming up in moments on Sterling on Sunday.
This is Muskegon, Michigan's own Velo Hool, the Barney Fife of customers. People of Walmart, later. Sterling at night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Hey, welcome. This is Sterling on Sunday. I'm James Parker, sitting in for Walter Sterling. Thank you for hanging out and deciding to spend, choosing me to spend the last few moments of your weekend with. And look, I know the weekend is coming to a close, but it's not over yet, so I'm here to extend it a little bit. And if you've already been listening to the show, thank you for hanging out. If you don't recognize my voice, I'm the guy who normally on this show is the host of Florida Stories.
Wait,
Hold my beer.
Yeah, I'm that guy. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right, enough of that. We have a guest, though. This is a friend of mine, Emil Cirillo, who 20 years ago or so we worked together on 105.3 in Dallas. But since then, I have gone on to have a fair to Midland radio career, and he has gone off to continue being the serial entrepreneur that I knew him as back then. And the reason I'm having him on the show now is one of his latest endeavors is Emil is recently become the proud owner of a shiny, sweet little pot farm, legal pot farm in Oklahoma. So Emil Cirillo, come, please. Share the stories from the legal weed industry with the listeners of Sterling on Sunday. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. All right. So
let's start. Why get into this industry? What made you be a guy who wasn't in the pot industry, who has no history of farming that I know of, decide I'm going to be a pot farmer?
Well, I had some previous experience with that side of the business on the wrong side of the tracks. So that was one thing that always kind of intrigued me. I thought the markup was incredible.
You were in the distribution side of the drug market.
Wrong side of the tracks.
All right. So now we're getting into the supply side, but things have changed. Now the supply side is legal. So, I mean, doesn't it still kind of have that stigma around it when you're surrounded by weed plants and you get a little nervous if a cop pulls up? But now, you know, you really don't have to worry about it. It's legal now.
Well, of course, depending on the state that you're in, and in Oklahoma, it is medically okay to consume THC in weed. So people would have to have a prescription, but therefore, thus the need to grow it in state, so they issue licenses. So the way that the grow is controlled, it's very controlled. I mean, each plant is tagged. And you record the weight of that plant at the end of the harvest, and then you have a certain amount of pounds.
This sounds like cattle. So each plant has like its own serial number, and you got to keep like a spreadsheet on the weight of all your plants before and after?
Well, the weight at harvest.
Oh, okay, weight at harvest.
You know, and again, I'm going into this, James, you know, we're talking 3 months, you know, 2 months. So I'm learning on the fly, but your question was what made me decide to get into it. I thought, well, there's got to be a huge markup in the cost of a plant that has a, you know, retail price of $2,400 to $1,000, you know, is where it's dropped down to now. But at the time of this particular pot farm's business plan being developed, you know, the price, you know, was about $2,400 a pound. So that was interesting to me.
The margins bring you into it. Okay, so what have we learned thus far? What are these limits you're talking about? What's like the limit on the, like, is there a number of plants you can have or number of poundage you can grow?
No. Well, the permit, so the state will go ahead and they'll issue permits.
State of Oklahoma?
The state of Oklahoma, right. Correct. And then you have to do certain things to get those permits, and depending on the states. So you meet those requirements, somebody goes out, gets a permit, or a license, we'll call it, yeah, not a permit, but gets a license, and then you scale that license to the amount of pounds that you anticipate that you're going to grow. So there's certain grow models that would be like, hey, you go into 45 miles outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma. You look for maybe a Pizza Hut that didn't make it, you know, or some kind of building of that size, you know, that's got parking lot around it, and it's maybe got 20,000 feet under a canopy, And so then you go in there and you go, okay, we can paint this all white. We can make this into one huge, you know, under canopy grow. And that's probably your business model. And then you probably got some other people that come in there and big money, you know, big amount of land. Hey, what can we raise in some hedge fund pot farm, you know, ship money? How did we, you know, I mean, there's that type of attempt going on, whether it's in California or, you know, all these different states. There's been articles on that. So anyway, Oklahoma had limited its licenses. They weren't issuing licenses anymore. And so I see that as possibly an opportunity. But I've seen the price drop, you know, from 2,400 to like 1,000. So imagine a business model a year ago, which I wasn't in, and now you're getting in. So to me, it seems like right now price is low. It's tough to be a grower. It's a good time to get in.
Well, you're the only legal weed farmer I know. How many plants do you have going right now?
As we speak, just planted our first crop, which we're anticipating will come out somewhere in first week of August. About 352 tags is last that I heard. So that's what we had to order. Those plants will now be entered into the Oklahoma metric system and registered. And so then state inspectors will come out throughout the grow. They'll announce that they're coming, and then we have to be there, or, you know, not we, but people that are associated with the growing part of it have to be there. And, you know, it goes from there. And so I'm in the early stages. We haven't been, you know, met with the state inspector yet, but I did go out and do the farming part of it. I can tell you, being a grower sounds sexy, but it's like being a farmer, man. Oh, it's even worse.
Well, it's a little different though, because the weed you grow doesn't come from seeds. It doesn't have seeds. So you don't do what normal farmers do, where you go out and plant seeds. You have to get, is it clones? Is that what you do?
I mean, we could, I guess we could go out and do that, but
that's not what they do, right?
No, that's not what we did. The way that, you know, so, okay. So I find the farm, the story on it was, you know, the guy I met with him early, you know, the year before, I was like, hey, you know, I'm interested, you know, in doing this. And he's like, no, this is going to be my retirement. And, you know, I'm not interested. So, okay. Gave me the Heisman a little bit. I'm like, all right. So a year later, you know, I'm checking in, seeing how the grows are going. And I heard he's not hitting the finish line in terms of where he needs to be in order to be approved to sell that medically. So he grows it for 12 weeks, has it tested, and it tests hot. So Oklahoma says, nope, you can't sell that. You have to destroy it. So basically he's in business for a year and he can't sell a product. So that's where I jumped.
Wait, what was wrong with the plants that he couldn't sell them?
So they tested high in iron when they went the actual weed and they sent it into Oklahoma. So if you want the backstory on that, it's located over top of a well. He was getting water out of the well. He had never grown before, and he had never really built a pot farm before, but he watched a YouTube video. And so he went and he built the structure and what it looked like to be a grow room.
Too much iron out of it. So it's all, hang on. Is all this indoor or outdoor?
All this is indoor.
Okay. He was just sourcing water from a well and bringing it indoor.
Right. So, but it was coming up from the well. And so when it tested after the first time that he had done the grow, it tested high in iron.
Okay.
It was one of the things. He assumed that had come from the well water. And so he went and he put a filtration system in on the next 12-week grow. Next 12-week grow grows. They come in at the end of it. And lo and behold, he tests high for iron again.
All right.
Same problem.
All right. So is that the cycle for from baby to harvest, 12 weeks?
About 12 weeks.
Really? That's it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I've never really grown weed before. So what happens at harvest time? Do you have to like cut it and hang it upside down like tobacco, or do you bag it up real quick?
Well, A, I've never been to a harvest.
Okay.
So B, that's going to be coming August 1st. How that'll work here is I'll invite several of my friends out for their first pot farm harvest, and we'll go and we'll cut down the plants. And then I guess we got to weigh them, and then we send that in.
Sean, you want to go bag some weed in August? We could just do the little Ziploc sandwich baggies?
Oh, man.
Well,
like
a, I mean,
like
of course, there's going to be samples for the crew.
Oh, man. So, but we would have to go to Tulsa,
right?
We'll
have to have a plan or two that just didn't make it.
Yeah. Okay, so is there a tester opening available for the Amel pot farm?
Of course.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a very serious test. We're going to need someone with experience.
We're probably going to have those auditions the week of harvest.
Yeah,
we'll,
right.
We'll invite several people out as testers at the end of that harvest. We'll award one the winner, and you'll be allowed to come back in 12 weeks again and apply for the position.
This is so bizarre. Like, we're going to fill that place up, and I don't even think we have an Oklahoma affiliate on this show. All right, so we don't know what the harvest process looks like, but I
can tell you how it started. I mean, it like, dude, you are a farmer. Like, you have to take three. Do you want to know how to grow? Like, I can share that.
No. We don't need to hear all that. Well, hang on. We got to take a break here. This is Amel Cirillo, a friend of mine, fellow broadcaster. He's part of the Radio Misfits Broadcast Network, and you can hear him on all his other projects. Amel Cirillo. It's a not a very common name, so it pops up when you Google it. Oh, believe me, it pops up. I'm James Sparker, in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of William Shatner.
Follow her down to a bridge by a fountain where rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies.
Hey there, I'm James Parker, in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. If you have a comment for the show, I've been a little delinquent about giving out the number, 888-688-WALT, you know, short for Walter, 888-688-WALT. That translates to 888-688-9258. And I'm going to make you feel old real quick. Remember when you had that old Nokia brick phone, and in order to text, if you wanted to do the shortcut, since you didn't have the full keyboard, you could just type the letters on each number. So if you wanted like a K, you would hit the 5 twice, because the first time you hit 5, it would be a J. The second time you hit a 5, it would be the K. And the third time, it would be an L. My kids, who are 7, 9, 11, and 12, have no idea what that's like. They don't even know that predictive text was ever a thing or even existed. You feel old now? Thank you. Also, me and the kids went to a Chinese buffet. And look, one amazing thing about having kids is it will make you see the entire world through new eyes. Yeah, like, you are trying to at all times understand what your kids are going through, and you realize that you go into every situation with this whole lifetime full of context, but your kids don't. So you try and strip it away and be like, what are they seeing for the first time? Or what are they seeing that I'm not seeing? Or what are they seeing that I've seen 1,000 times and I don't even think about anymore? And so I do this trick even without the kids now, but we went to the Chinese buffet. And I don't know when every Chinese buffet decided to get on the same menu, but they all have the same crap. And I'm talking specifically about the Chinese buffet, not the Chinese takeout, which is on a different menu, but they are all the same too. And they all have the same thing. They have sesame chicken. They have kung pao chicken. They have sweet and sour chicken. They have orange chicken. They have beef with broccoli. And they don't tell you what the sauce is, but you know there's beef and there's broccoli. And it's the same stuff, right? And I don't know how they're all on the same page. But I tell you what, I want to go to China, and when I do go to China, I better see in every restaurant the classic traditional Chinese dish of a bunch of bananas with strawberry syrup squirted on them. Have you seen this at the Chinese buffet? I'm not talking about the real Chinese restaurant where there's a menu and some waiter comes out and asks you what you like and you make all these modifications to it and it's like rated in the local magazine that rates restaurants or whatever. I'm talking about the regular old plain Chinese buffet. Every town has one, and the bigger your town is, the more you have. And if you're in a big enough town, you're guaranteed to have a Great Wall of China. You're guaranteed to have a China dragon or a golden dragon. You're guaranteed to have a hot wok or a China king or something to that effect. There's just the same names they use over and over in every town you go to. But I don't know how they all got the same memo to put bananas out there with strawberry syrup squirted on it. Now, is that really a traditional, classic Chinese cultural culinary delight? Or is that something they just made up on the spot because it's like super cheap and one Chinese buffet found out about it and they somehow have a conduit to every Chinese buffet I have ever been to in my middle class American lifestyle that I've encountered this classic traditional culinary staple of a banana with strawberry syrup squirted on it. Now, after all that making fun of it, I still eat it. Oh, hell yeah, I'll eat it. It's actually pretty good. And if it is a classic Chinese culinary dish, well, kudos to the Chinese. Thank you very much. I don't know how classic or traditional it could be because strawberry syrup really only existed for, I'm guessing, 60 years or so. It's so bizarre, man. The Chinese buffet situation is really out of hand because right next to that in most of your Chinese buffet experiences is the classic traditional Chinese dish of, that's right, Jell-O. Jell-O. I guess that's a big thing because it's at every, look, I've never been to China. I do want to go. I'm not a well-traveled man, and I would love to see the world. And I want to go because I have a little theory here. China has 1.4 billion, with a B, human beings. Remember, America is 330 million people. I mean, we're like, what, I don't know, second, third, fourth most populous country ever. But China's like four of us. And I bet you last night for dinner, or tonight for dinner, out of 1.4 billion people, zero of them had bananas with strawberry syrup squirted on it. And that bothers me. I'm James Parker, in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Walter M. Sterling.
Who was this man? What was he? Others looked at radio and saw a gadget.
Walter M. Sterling
looked at radio and saw a household possession capable of enriching the lives of millions.
Sterling on Sunday, tonight.
Hi, it's Dan and Becky Gaffney. What good is it having a doctor if he never answers the phone when you call?
We'll talk about it tonight on Sterling on Sunday.
Lessons for life learned outside of class. I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk show host. I'll tell you about it later here on Sterling on Sunday.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free 888-688-WALT.
Welcome, Sterling on Sunday. I'm James Parker, sitting in for Walter Sterling. You normally hear me on Florida Stories as the host of one of the many segments of this variety show. But today I'm sitting in the big chair holding it down for Walter, who should be back next week. Joining me now is a fellow broadcaster and a guy who has gone all around the radio dial as well as the TV dial, including things like you were on Fuse for a while. This is my friend Keynote. Keynote, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, James? Everything going good? I hear you sounding good and crisp, sir.
Well, the funny part about this is we're Americans. We're not on any Canadian radio station, so I don't have to worry about ruffling any feathers. But how does an American end up on Fuse? Isn't that the Canadian music station?
Actually, it was out of New York for a while. It was nationally, it was pretty much MTV's for most of the 2000s. It was one of MTV's direct competitors. I'm not sure if they were owned by a Canadian company at the time, but Jennifer Lopez bought them out, and it was a actual video channel. And I was a VJ on there for a minute and did like hip hop segments and everything. And it was an interesting time, and we did it out of Manhattan, New York.
Oh, that's interesting. So it just got bought out and became a subsidiary of MTV of some sort?
Well, it was a direct competitor of theirs. I'm not sure what their standings is now, because every time I flip the channel, it's like some type of old TV show, or they'll have some type of hip-hop documentary. But when I was there, there was no hip-hop. I was like the most hippie-oppiest person there. It was all pretty much rock, and all their VJs were very much rock influenced and they did a lot of the dark, more rock, not so much of the pop rock. So when they were trying to add a little bit of color in there somewhere. And so they got me and a couple of other of my friends, and we were there for a little while.
Oh, that was you. You were the pretending of color, huh?
The pretending of color, because I'm like light beige. But I think the street attitude is what did it, man. And my history, you know, at the time I was in hip hop radio in a personality doing that for quite a long time. So they picked me up out of the lineup and brought me on board. And we was part of a reality show they had up there called Fuse VJ Search. And they had this up there. They made it look like we were living there, but we were there for just, you know, several weeks at a time.
Okay, so Keynote, as a guy who is well steeped in hip hop culture from a couple decades of broadcasting on such issues, one thing that I dislike coming out of that culture, and you know, it's not just y'all. There's a segment of Caucasian culture that has this problem as well. Is this body positivity movement? And I think a lot of people say that they're okay with it, but secretly we all know, you know, behind closed doors that there's nothing cool about being wildly overweight.
No, I think what it is just trying to, you know, since hip hop became what I used to love about hip hop at a very young age is that it was not the cool kids at the table. What it was the FU to the cool kids at the table. And we had our own table, and anything that was popular was kind of like FU. You know what I mean? We're going to do our own thing. But then as money, millions and millions of dollars became the thing. Well, then it became the cool kids. And I think we're just seeing another part of that, to where they're trying to appease Hollywood and these images. Yeah, because there's a lot of things. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself. And you're supposed to love yourself as a person. You have to. That's a beautiful thing, man. That's love who you are. Love how you look, like all that good stuff. But when you become morbidly obese to where it's killing you, you can't back that up. That's not a good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't want to stress. I want to stress, we're not going the other direction. We're not like, you should oppress obese people or tell them they're disgusting fat bodies and be mean to them. But I think that is a that's not a sign of love when you encourage people to continue pursuing an unhealthy set of lifestyle choices. And you know, while it's not my place to go around and say, hey man, maybe you should do some squat thrusts or some deep knee bends. but perhaps the body positivity movement is going to have some negative consequences that they don't intend, is what I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, you're not going to see a lot of morbidly obese 80-year-olds. It's not going to be happening. You're not going to see a lot of R&B singers and rappers that are going to be super, you know, overweight and in their 70s. That just doesn't happen because it's physically damn near impossible. And so what you have is a lot of people feeding into we're obviously, as you know, we live in the day of likes and retweets and reposts and so on and so forth. So if you come out there and say, yeah, girl, it's okay to be fat as hell and love yourself, instead of saying, hey, love yourself enough to change, you're not going to get that many likes off of that. You know, you're going to get more likes and follows off
the identification of how supportive women are of other women who are no longer a threat to them. And you're encouraging them to go down this negative set of habits that's caused them to be overweight. And oh, I get it. They're not competing with you anymore. You want to encourage women to do things that they don't compete with you on. Oh, you're huge. Go ahead, please keep eating. And I find something that's a little self-serving about encouraging your competition to pursue these bad habits, when most of the women that I see encouraging Lizzo would be horrified if that was their body.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, is that, yeah, you're decreasing the competition whenever you're laying everybody out to waste. You know what I'm saying? And it becomes a thing to where, you know, they're looking on Instagram or they're looking on TikTok and they're saying, yeah, I don't have a competition with that girl anymore. You go ahead. You have a cute face. You're beautiful. Do what you do. It's like, yeah, well, you're not threatened by them. But if Lizzo went and got one of those BBLs and got her waist taken down and she has a pretty face, so the rest of it would be popping out, you'd have a problem with it.
Okay, something else I would like to ask you about, Keynote, as a guy who has been a DJ, a video DJ, a commenter. You've been part of the hip-hop media for 2 decades. Mm-hmm. I want to hear your thoughts, because we've never had this conversation before. But okay. As we get older, I'm really tiring of this recurring trope that people my age are saying, and I used to hear it from older people when I was young, and that is the same old statement that music today sucks compared to when I was young. So now I used to hear that from people my dad's age, but now that I am my dad's age, I am hearing people my age say that to younger people. And somewhere along the line, it's just it dawned on me that no, you just stopped keeping up with current music and now you're lost. And here's right. the real scoop. Yeah, maybe some of today's music sucks, but some of your music sucked too.
Right. Well, I think what it is, I can speak from the hip hop standpoint, not so much from the pop music standpoint. I'm very familiar and I keep up with it as well, but my opinion doesn't have as much weight in that arena. But when it comes to the hip hop and the commercial rap, there's some really good stuff. There is some really, really good new artists, man. There's some guys that are coming up in their late teens, early 20s that are amazing. But here's the kicker. You're not going to hear them all over your radio. You're not going to see them with the millions of followers. You're going to see them, you know, they're going to have some good numbers, but they're not going to be out there because of what they're speaking about. And as a man who's been in many, 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 many of these music meetings, been in many, many, many of these record, back when record labels meant something, I've been in so many of those meetings when they're trying to decide what artists to push and whatnot. They're not going to push the artist who's saying anything or has any kind of talent. In hip hop, it's the strangest things, man, because it's like, let's take a rock and roll comparison. Let's say a guy who's really great at the guitar, who could really, really sing really, really well. In hip hop, they're not going to push that if a guy can rap really well or produce really, really well. When I mean by that, I mean, has something to say and has really good at the actual art of it. They're not. But in rock and roll, you're going to get respect from the guy who can play guitar really well or can sing really well. They're going to push that. They're going to be like, it doesn't matter the content. I'm just saying as far as the actual talent. They're going to push that. But in hip hop, it's one of the only art forms where it's like, man, this dude sucks. We need to put him on. Or this person is really, really simple and dumb and they sound stupid. We really need to put them on. And I've been in these music meetings. I've been at these radio, we'd have these things called 5 o'clocks. And I'd go into these 5 o'clock meetings with the program director and we'd be listening to new music. And at the time, I had a lot of power. And so the program director would be like, what do you think about this artist's keynote? I'd be like, oh, man, they're horrible. It was an ongoing thing. My partner, Headcracking Super K, would sit there with me and they'd be like, oh, yeah, this sucks. Y'all are going to love it. And that's just unfortunate in urban music. So as that continues on, it gets worse and worse and worse. So the music that's being pumped out commercially does not progress at all. So, of course, the great artists stay in what is typically called the underground, end quotes. And they might move music. They can make a good living. I know some underground artists you might never heard of. They have big houses, nice houses, but they're not super rich and famous. Why? Because they're saying something within their content. They're actually good at what they're doing, and they experiment with music. They're actually music lovers, where you hear people who are not even on beat, who can barely read, who don't have any kind of knowledge of the world around them outside of their neighborhood. And those are the ones with the big gold chains and the Mercedes and the big houses, and they're known. And that's just how it's almost set up like that, not to be conspiratorial anyway. But
right.
That's what it is.
Right. Those guys don't get long careers, you know, like the dudes who did Laffy Taffy, D4L, they haven't produced anything since, right? And look,
real quick, what's crazy is I'm friends with one of those guys. I used to hate them dudes. I thought I did. I couldn't stand them because of what I thought they were doing to hip-hop culture, but I'm friends with one of the guys, and he's an actual lover of hip-hop. He was like, look, man, we were just having fun, and it ended up blowing up. He can't speak for the rest of the guys in it.
Sure.
But he actually comes out with this. He actually did a song, a very hip-hop song he produced for my group. And it's super hip hop, like underground, rah, rah, but you would never know it came from them. But guess what? His label and what our radio station and my radio company I worked for when I was contracted at the time was pushing it hard. We were laughing. They had straight faces like, man, this is going to be a hit. Why? Because it was stupid and repetitive.
Ouch. Okay, so there's one thing that I've noticed, because as radio people, whether or not you work in these other genres, you've been in the building with people who work in other genres. So as we've been tasting the different formats there are, you know, they have goofy names, adult contemporary, urban AC, hot AC.
Mm-hmm.
There's one genre, country music, that has a ton of songs about your dad or being a dad or All American Girl or There Goes My Life or Let Me Tell You a Secret About a Father's Love. And no, that's a real song. That's like the biggest George Strait song of all time.
It just sounds crazy to me.
Imagine a rock and roll or hip hop song about Let Me Tell You a Secret About a Father's Love. You can't, because there's never been one. And that bothers me. I don't know why, But that bothers me. My guest has been Keynote. Sorry to cut you off. We just got to run. Thank you very much, Keynote, for
No problem.
I'm saying K-E-Y-N-O-T-E. Go look it up. Twitter, Facebook, wherever on Google. Go check him
out. Thank you, sir.
I'm James Parker. This is In for Walter Sterling. It's Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Will Ferrell.
I'm listening to what you're asking me, and if you're not listening to my answers, let's just call it a day.
You're a dinosaur, Sipowicz.
I'm a dinosaur.
You jeopardize that collar because it sticks in your throat on first grade.
It sticks in my throat, how you got it?
Every white guy in the department with second grade thinks he should have gotten my grade promotion. Half of you guys think I got it on my back.
Hey, Walter, on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to tell a story from my Vice files. So when I got hired in the mid-80s, Vice was known as Public Morals Division. They changed the name to Vice in the 2000s. And basically what Vice deals with is the vices of life. Prostitution, call girls, illegal gambling, bottle clubs, social clubs where after 4 o'clock in New York, you can't get a drink anymore. And these places stay open and they provide gambling, after hours places, all sorts of stuff goes on in there. So next door to my office were the Vice guys, and they always had the best stories because they were always involved in the dark side of things. So this detective tells me a story that he's on Craigslist and he's kind of just fishing around, seeing if he can find somebody that's offering sex for money. He contacts this woman and he arranges to meet her and they're going to have sex for a couple of $100. And he meets her out in the parking lot of some place and she gets in the car and he looked like a biker. He was a rough looking guy and they're talking, arranging, you know, sex for money. And he just felt her out and he says, you know, I wish I knew where to get coke around here. She goes, coke? How much do you need? He goes, can you get me an ounce? She said, yeah, sure. So they put the sex thing on the back burner and they arrange to meet a couple of days later with an ounce of cocaine. Sure enough, she shows up with an ounce of cocaine, pays her the money, and he leaves. So the plan was to set her up in another deal, and the second time when she brought the drugs, they were going to pull her out of the car and place her under arrest. A couple of weeks later, she shows up at the location, he gets in the car, and before she gives him the drugs, she goes, you know, I'm wondering if you can help me out with something. And he goes, well, what's that? She goes, I don't love my husband anymore. I have an insurance policy on him, and, you know, if you could bump him off for me, you know, I'd make it worth your while. So this Vice detective rolls with it and he says, well, it's going to cost you. And I forget if it was $5,000 or $10,000. And she said, yeah, I can do that. So he buys the cocaine off of her, right? And they leave. And through a series of emails, texts, and phone conversation over the week, they're arranging this murder for hire plot. So a week or two goes by, he meets her at the prearranged location, she shows up with the money, and she's just going on and on and on about how her husband's got to go. Well, the detective, you know, took everything in, recorded everything, and, you know, gave the signal, and she got pulled out of the car, and then she was arrested for soliciting the murder of her husband, in addition to the drug deals that she had sold him, probably close to 2 ounces of cocaine. So you never know in the NYPD when you think of something as, you know, simple as vice, drugs, and prostitution that could turn into a murder for hire plot. So be sure to check out my new book, The NYPD's Flying Circus, Cops, Crime, and Chaos.
Sterling on Sunday. I'm James Parker, sitting in for the great Walter Sterling. Oh, stop it. Joining me is Sean from the producer booth. And the reason why I'm bringing Sean is I'm not sure what your age is, but I'm in my 40s now. And Sean is in his 20s. And I wanted to ask Sean, as a single man in his 20s, what the dating world is like. Because I haven't been in the dating world since I was 30 years old. I met my wife. We dated for a couple years. We got married. We've been together ever since. Happily ever after. We're the perfect couple. And the downside with that is, man, I don't know what the action's like anymore. So here's my problem, Sean. I have my friends who are in their 30s and 40s, and some of them in their 50s, who are going through the dating experience.
Right.
And it's a horrifying S show. It is, you know, like someone threw a bag of dog poop up into a ceiling fan is what it sounds like to me. However, I think a lot of that is because once you've gone past that sort of phase where you can meet, you know, the love of your life and, you know, find your soulmate and get married and have kids and have a happy little family and live happily ever after. Once you've blown that, once you get to like age 40, that's not a possibility anymore. And so since there's no possibility of gold at the end of the rainbow, the whole thing is such a negative, miserable experience. I'm hoping to go dig into a 20-something and hear a little positivity from the dating world. Please, Sean, tell me it's not that bad in your 20s.
Oh, man. Well, let me try to just wrap it up as quickly as possible because we're actually coming up on our break. Yeah, the dating world in today's generation now is like crazy. It's all about fast. It's the dating apps. You know, you got Tinder. You got so many other different apps that you can find somebody to quickly hook up with as fast as possible. So it's just one of those things now that like the access of finding a mate is very overwhelming. And I feel like a lot of people are going to be oversaturated by finding love.
You know, you feel like it would be easier than ever because we have all these tools at our disposal. But Sean's story is a lot of what I'm hearing from my younger friends.
Oh, yeah,
good luck.
I would love to talk more about it, too.
Good luck. All right, I'm James Parker in for Walter Sterling. You're listening to Sterling on Sunday.
Walter M. Sterling.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by the words of Conk.
Join me next time when I go back in time again. Not in an exciting way like in a film. I'm probably just looking at some old pots or something.
Hey there, I'm James Parker in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday. Do you know the name Headcrack? If you don't, this is the guy that is the third most popular hip-hop morning show in America. He's syndicated nationally. That's okay. You don't listen to it. You don't need to know it. What you do need to know is that, you know, I'm not the normal host. I'm James Parker filling in. And my day job is doing a show with my friend Pugs called Pugs and Parker. He was a recent guest and he was telling us about his ayahuasca retreats. Do you know what that is? This is where some South American native tribal ritual has come to America where they get some fancy mushrooms that are psychedelic and amazing things are happening. And I think technically it's all legal. And this is getting a little popular with a lot of my friends, and I wanted you to hear about it. So this is from a recent episode of the show that is my day job, Pugs and Parker, with Headcrack.
We would like to know about your ayahuasca retreats. I'm fascinated by this.
Brother, I've gone on 4 retreats and participated in 11 ayahuasca ceremonies. It is
now this is ayahuasca is famous these days because Aaron Rodgers has become a big proponent of it. And
I beat him to it. He just has more followers than me. But, you know, it finds you when it needs to find you in life. And it found me at a time when I needed it. And it really, truly changed my life. And I'm really looking forward to going on yet another ayahuasca retreat. Because just as soon as I think I've completed the book, because even on my last retreat, I was like, all right, after this one, I think I'm good. And then when I was done, I was like, oh, my God, I need more. You know, I need more because it just continues to unlock things about yourself and the universe that you have no idea is going on.
Well, explain to people what ayahuasca is.
Okay, so ayahuasca is a tea that's brewed, right, by, you know, typically a shaman. And 9 times out of 10, you want to really do it with somebody who is from the lineage, who truly knows what they're doing. So the guy who I would go to the retreats with, he was from South America, but they come to the States and they do it like in a little traveling scenario. Like the first one I went to was actually in Georgia, because most people think you need to go to like the jungles of Brazil and Colombia and all this other stuff. And not so much, right? So basically they take the root of this tea, they boil it and they mix it with, I think, like some aloe vera water or whatever. And then you drink it and then you just kick back and relax and a purge will happen. It's either going to be uptown or downtown, but a purge is going to happen. Just prepare for it. You know, like there's nothing you can do about it. Like you're going to like purge up all this dark stuff. And Man, and the crazy thing, everybody's experience is always going to be different. Like during the time,
this is an hallucinogen. Yes, this is.
Yes.
How do we classify this? Because it's not just like a can of beer. This is.
Yeah, it's not quite a psychedelic per se, but it is a hallucinogen that opens up your pineal gland and your chakras in such a way to where you're hearing. You're seeing all the different frequencies and you're hearing all the different, you know, things. It's crazy because like the first time I knew people around me were speaking English because, yes, I'm still in America. However, my brain was rewired to like hear other things. And I know this is going to sound absurd. And to Jeff Ballard's question, yes, I did vomit quite a bit. uptown and downtown, but it's all controlled. You know, I made it to the bathroom, and that's the cool thing about when you go to certain controlled retreats. Because like the first one we went to, it was at a very beautiful house that had like a ceremony space in the basement of the house. So there was adequate bathrooms and all this other stuff. So that was a vibe. But so like when you go, you typically will do three ceremonies. And my very first ceremony, my takeaways that I wanted to have was, how did it feel when my mother died? Like, how did it feel for her? You know, was she in pain? Is she happy? And same thing with my grandmother. And because I like hip hop so much, the Notorious B.I.G. All of these people, what they experienced when they transitioned from this physical plane going into the spiritual plane, there's no drug that can replicate that. There's no amount of money you can find in your pockets. There's no check that anybody could write you that could replicate that feeling. Like, we truly are the ones who are here on earth suffering. And they're good. Like, this whole physical experience we're going through, this is all the pregame. This is all the pregame. We think everything here matters. It really doesn't. It's what happens next that is truly the mind-blowing experience. And I was able to experience what that felt like. Is that my phone?
Yeah.
Oh, let me hit decline. I think
it's Biggie.
There we go.
Head crack. You're a little psychonaut. Look at that.
I like existential head crack.
No, man, listen, if I could do it once a month or once every other month, I would, but I don't want to break my antenna. But so, like, that was, like, the big takeaway from the very first night of my ceremony.
You got to keep it a treat. You got to, like, once every 9 months, make it a treat. Can't be doing it every day, right?
Oh, no, you can't do it every day. Like, there was somebody who I talked to recently who knew someone who, like, did just way too many, and they were no longer grounded. Yeah. On earth anymore. They were no longer grounded. But the last thing I want to tell you about my very first ceremony, like the retreat I went, rather, there was a young lady who was a midwife, but she couldn't bear children. And I'm like, how tragic is that? So after my first ceremony, because that's all I want, I was like, yo, is my mom okay? That's all I wanted to know. So the second ceremony, it made me a little bit closer to nature because I hate outside. I hate grass. At least I used to. Now I have a better appreciation for nature. I understand that you do have to go outside and walk around barefoot sometimes just to, like, ground yourself. But I always felt like I was going to get bit by a spider, not get powers, die. In that order, right? But now I appreciate outside and walking around like, you know, like a hippie. But the third ceremony, I'm like, yo, I got everything I need from this trip. Let me lend my energy to the room. So when I did the tea that night, I threw up and my purge was so dark and so black, right? That I knew it wasn't for me. So this one girl who I got really, you know, chummy with during the trip, who told me about, like, you know, like, yeah, like, you know, like me and my husband, you know, we've been trying to have a kid for, like, you know, like about a year and it's just not working out. And, you know, and I was like, yo, how tragic is that? And you're a midwife. So once I purged, I can't even quite explain it, Pugs and James, but I was able to send my energy into her body and fix what was wrong with her. And then I rolled over and I told her after the ceremony, I was like, hey, listen, you're going to have a baby in 11 months. It's going to be a girl. She's going to be amazing. She looked at me like, you mother, like, how dare you? But I believed it in my heart of hearts that what I was saying was right because I felt what I felt and I knew what I felt and I knew what was going on. So we exchanged numbers. And we kept in touch. About 6-7 weeks later, she sends me a text of a stick with the blue lines that says, hey, you're pregnant. Literally had a baby 11 months later. It was a boy, though, but maybe he's gay.
You know? Well, wait a second. I was going to say, how many months later? Because are you sure you didn't just hook up with this woman?
No, I definitely did not. Unless it was like in a succubus spiritual kind of way. But that was really truly crazy. And it taught me a lot because there's a lot of people who are energy workers, people who do Reiki. And so I realized at that point, it's like, wow, I thought my goal in life was to make the best rap album ever recorded. No, it's to, like, help and heal people.
Man, I love that stuff. I am so fascinated by the inner workings of the mind and unlocking, you know, these boxes. And we know that psychedelics and we know that certain other kinds of organics and stuff like that have shown that they do allow you to sort of go different places with your mind. The exploration of that, and I've always been, I'm not a big, like, I've done mushrooms a couple of times, I've done acid a couple of times, but certainly not in the last 25 years. But the idea and the allure of later in life, like now going back and investigating that and just seeing like what kind of muck we can get into on our own heads. That's fascinating.
And you're supposed to do that in your 20s. Like you're supposed to go through one of these fantastic voyages and
I don't know. I think it's when
you stick your brain out and stretch it and figure out and then you know what like what to do with your life. You guys
No, I you said it's free. Now that I've been through Now that I've had a life, now's the time to go and unpack all that crap. At 20, I got nothing.
Yeah, absolutely right. Because I feel like if I was doing that stuff in my 20s, I don't know. Because like I was Mr. Clean in my 20s. Like, yo, I don't smoke no weed. Like, shrooms, get out of here, you druggie. But now, at this point in my life, I realize that mushrooms are actually better than weed, far as like the what it does for your brain and connect all those synapses. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we as men, we don't cry enough. We don't emote enough.
No, like, we don't.
Weed makes you feel nothing. Mushrooms make you feel everything. And yeah. Sometimes you got to go through that range of emotion and do that data dump.
Wow, that is a really interesting way of putting it. Weed makes you feel nothing. And I had to think for a moment. James, do you agree with that?
Mushrooms make you feel everything?
Yeah, I think in this context, I do agree with that.
I think alcohol makes you feel nothing. I think weed can really enhance whatever you're doing, but I get the big sense to where weed kind of simplifies your mind down where you're not like thinking about.
Relaxes you to a point where your anxiety is nothing.
Yeah.
But mushrooms are one of those in the category of drugs where you don't do that if you're not already in a good mood. If you're in a bad mood, don't do mushrooms.
You will have a terrible trip.
Right. And if you're in a bad mood, don't do acid.
And I've never done acid before, but I have done mushrooms in a terrible mood just because I just needed to wrestle with my emotions and the things I was dealing with at that time. So I'm a glutton for punishment in that regards. But and also plugs, like, I don't know what mushrooms you tried back in the days and I don't know which ones you tried, James. However, if you know what the right kind of mushroom to get for, like, you know, whatever you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. It's game changer. I mean, there's Penis Envy. There is Golden Teacher. There's this one I got from DC called Jedi Mind F, and they're like the size of little popcorn kernels. And if you just pop three, you're good, and you can still function. It's a very clean, organic feeling.
Well, that's another thing.
All right, so that's my buddy Headcrack in a clip from the Pugs and Parker show. You know, I haven't really done a whole lot of promotion of myself. My name is James Parker, sitting in for Walter Sterling. You normally hear me on this show as the host of the great Florida Stories. I'm very proud of that.
Wait, Hold my beer.
But I'm also part of some other projects during the week. Pugs and Parker is one of them. But you can find me. I have an incredibly generic name, James Parker. So you already know how to spell it. Go find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you're already on. I'm probably there. Leaving behind a good trail of great entertainment. So go find me. And we got one segment left. So don't go anywhere because it is now officially on the East Coast, my birthday. I'm James Parker, in for Walter Sterling. This is Sterling on Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by the words of Liza Schlesinger.
Gentlemen, let's say you get a girl to go home with you. All right. Let's say you get a girl to go back to your apartment by the grace of God.
Psychology, it's not a science, there's no appliance, take it from me. It isn't useless, so you say, while working in fast food every day. Don't waste your cash, you won't get it back, it's psychology.
My son is studying psychology in college, but he'll miss the best course to take in that subject. Hi, I'm Brad. I learned more about human psychology when I was in college, and not from any course I took. I worked in a liquor store part-time to help defray expenses. And wow, did I see some interesting psychology there. There was Norman, the guy who stopped by every evening around 5:45 to pick up his nightly pint of whiskey. There was Slim, the fellow who would reserve a couple of cases of beer midweek and then pick them up on Saturday. You see, Indiana had a law that you couldn't sell beer on Sunday. Well, Slim would set up shop in an alley and sell out his cases of beer on Sunday afternoons at a tidy little profit. And Melvin was an interesting case. He worked at the Chevrolet truck body plant when it was still open, but I cannot honestly say if he ever really helped make a truck. He was pals with the store owner, and he would drop by, usually midday, go into the cooler to get some orange juice, and then grab a half pint of vodka from behind the counter. He would then produce a glass and stood by the counter all day, drinking screwdrivers. That, too, is a major state liquor law violation. You are not allowed to drink inside a packaged liquor store. We were told to put Melvin's purchases on the tab. I don't know how many truck bodies Melvin made that year, but I made a point not to buy that particular model of pickup truck. Now, that's a class my son won't have to attend, but he will miss a lot. How about you? What life lessons have you learned outside of the classroom? Tell me about it. I'll open the phones after the news and the weather. Brought to you by Sherson Lehman Brothers.
Where do you want to be in 5 years?
I had an old Studebaker truck and $300 when I started this company. In a few years, my sons will be ready to take over, and then I'd like to... I never told anybody this. I want to live in Paris and go to cooking school. Hey, that's what I want to do. Will I have the money to do it?
You can get there from here with Sherson Lehman Brothers.
Welcome to Starling on Sundays. I'm James Parker, sitting in for the great Walter Sterling, and you are joining me on a very special occasion because it is now officially in some time zones. My birthday! My birthday's May 8th. So you're the first person to share my birthday with me. Like, my wife hasn't even told me happy birthday yet. So it's just me and you, bud. Dude, this is so great. So you don't understand how much I love my birthday. I'm 46. I know. So I'm not, like, young and hip and cool anymore. I got it. But this is a very special day. And, like, look, this isn't your special day, but this is my special day. And I want to thank you for being there as part of it. Like, this is getting recorded, and the weird thing about, like, being in radio is when I first started, you would say stuff, and it would go out on the air, and if someone heard it, good, if not, oh well. But everything we say now is recorded, so, like, my grandkids might hear this. Your grandkids might hear this. Either way, thank you for being there for my birthday. It's an honor. Thank you for listening. I'm James Parker, in for the great Walter Sterling. Go find me on social media, James Parker. This has been Sterling on Sunday.
M. Sterling.
And my classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Next Sunday. All right. Right. Stay bright.